Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan. With me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And special guest, Kipley Brown. It's been like a whole week since we talked with you.
I know. It's been too long.
It was actually last night.
Thank you.
through the magic of podcasting, it was both last night and last week.
Oh, man. Don't give away all our trade secrets.
Magic.
You guys can morph time.
We can.
We're the Time Lords. Wait, we're doing the wrong show.
Yeah.
So as far as news goes, Star Trek Continues wrapped up with episode 11, which was fantastic. Probably heard us talk about that last week. It was amazing. And also, there's a Indiegogo from a lot of the people that worked on Star Trek Continues for a show, short film called When the Train Stops.
Yeah.
And Kipley's involved.
That's right. Yeah, we have a couple weeks left.
It may be less by the time this comes out.
Yeah. Okay. Good point. Yeah. We have an Indiegogo campaign going on right now. So if you have an extra dollar or two laying around and you donate, we can reach our goal and hopefully make this short film. It's kind of a Twilight style psychological thriller, and we're really excited about it.
And you're playing the character Deputy Karen Blake, correct?
From Transylvania.
Yes, and
From Transylvania,
yes. And Vic Mignogna's in it. And John DeLancey's in it. We have a lot of amazing cast in this.
And Michael Forrest?
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
I hope he makes it Forrestini on the show.
How could you forget?
Oh, yes, Forrestini's. They are the stuff of legend. And Darren Jacobs, who's a phenomenal actor as well.
Fantastic.
So it's going to be a Twilight Zone-esque story where characters all get on this train, I'm assuming, and something happens that is freaked out?
Well, not all of it's on a train. Okay. The bulk of it's on a train, and not all the characters get on the train. So, you know, some are train passengers, some aren't. And the only way you'll ever know by funding the campaign so that we can make it, and then you can see it.
That's right.
And that'd be awesome.
It'd be awesome. And like I've said before, I mean, our last episode, that you guys from Star Trek Continues have put together such a fine, awesome product that, you know, I really believe that everything else that you guys do together creatively is going to be just as fantastic. So people, if you have enjoyed Star Trek Continues, you should definitely consider going to the Indiegogo page and contributing to When the Train Stops, because this crew, they're really, really phenomenal people. They have good scripts. They have good actors. They have good directing. Everything is really, really fun. So
super solid.
This isn't some.
Thanks, guys.
I really sincerely mean that. I mean, what you guys done with Star Trek Continues, I think, completely solidifies what you guys are doing. Your group of, everybody in your whole party there. So,
like I said the other time, an 11 episode resume of awesome.
Yeah.
I would just want to put that on my IMDb page. Just 11 episodes of awesome and a link.
It's like awesome a quote, like from David Duncan's 11 episode resume of awesome.
Yeah, there you go.
Great.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you guys have done for Star Trek Continues. And I know, you know, not just this, but I know you probably, your crew will do more than just this over time. But obviously, we have to get this funded to, you know, make this a reality. So let's do it, people.
Yes. And Absolutely. Thank you all so much.
You're very, very welcome.
Well, this episode, we are going to do a little break. We're going to change things up. We're going to go back to kind of our old way of doing things. We're going to talk about an older episode. We're going to talk about the Next Generation episode, Measure of a Man. This is from Kipley's own request.
It's my favorite episode. I have many favorites, but this is it, the top notch right there.
This is a damn fine episode, and it's up there in the higher echelon of all, you know, Star Trek episodes.
Well, this episode, when I saw it when I was a kid, I thought like the next gen was cool, right? But when I saw this, it changed everything for me, and I became a disciple basically of the show. Just everything about it, just the concepts that they were talking about, just piqued this interest that I have in sort of what is it to be sentient and alive and conscious and a human. And, you know, it thrilled me. So
it's
credit it for my becoming addicted to Star Trek in general.
That's excellent. And this is one of those episodes, if you haven't seen it, you should definitely, you know, put it on. It's on Netflix. Just start watching right now. So
it's quintessentially Star Trek in all the best ways possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much so. So this is, like I said, this is Next Generation. This is season 2, episode 9, and first aired February 13th, 1989.
It's weird not saying 2017 anymore.
I know. But we had to go back sometime. This is, like I said, the title is A Measure of Man. So we get the beginning of this episode. The Enterprise is going around Regular One. Oh, wait, that's not Regular One. That's Starbase 173. It's a newly built Starbase.
And, so new, it's retro.
It is. And we get a scene where Miles O'Brien, Riker, and Pulaski and Data are all sitting down to play poker. And Data's obviously got the better hand, but I'm sorry, LaForge is there too. But Data has the better hand, but Riker bluffs his way through it. And because Data is not really, at this point, really understands everything about the game of poker, he gets bluffed by Riker, even though Data has the odds in his favor.
I love the part where he says, "You had nothing." He says that to Riker. And he says, "You know, but I was betting that you wouldn't call." Right. And he goes, "It makes very little when you cannot win." He goes, "But I did win."
Yeah, that's right.
And I would love that exchange. It's like he suddenly understood that it's not black and white. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, no, it's a great scene, and it's like obviously Data. We see him progress over the next couple seasons that he gets better at poker. But this might be the first scene we see him playing poker, but I'm not entirely certain.
Well, he did gamble in the Royale.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, he did.
That's the only redeeming part about the Royale is watching Data gamble.
I kind of like that episode. I have a tender place for it in my heart.
But James Kerwin's like, it can't get that cold. It can't.
Well, no. Let's talk about the science among the storms. Yes.
Well, so as we said, so they play their game. Data loses. Next, we have Picard having tea in the station. Jeez, Picard can just like loosen up and have a drink. And
I'll make you a drink, Picard.
Tea, Earl Grey hot.
Earl Grey hot. And I'm just going to hang out and check out the ladies at the bar. Who are you picking up with tea? Anyway, so he does run into
Grandmama.
It would work on me. Just saying.
It'd be like, oh, tea.
Oh, is that Earl Grey? Can I sit down?
All right. This is a man of my liking. So he does run into an old acquaintance or friend of his, sort of friend, maybe rival. Captain,
maybe lover.
I'm not really sure if there was lover, but something.
I'm pretty sure, you know, it was at least rough, whatever it was.
It's kind of left. It's left unknown, but it's like this crackling kind of film noir style dialogue that they have. So yes. You know that there's some strong chemistry between them, both adversarial and something else. And it's really cool.
It's
I love that.
I'll throw the chair at you. She goes, after that, it's like, oh, yes.
Yes, bust a chair. And then she goes, and a damn sexy man.
Yeah, that's right.
Incredibly uncomfortable.
That's right.
She likes that bald head.
Yeah, so I want to like pat it. pat the Picard pate.
It's like kissing a peanut. Okay, so. So, the character we are talking about is Philippa Louvois. So, and she's a Louvois, and she's a JAG officer, captain. That's a JAG officer for that sector, and I guess she has a new branch that she's opened up in the Starbase. So while they're kind of doing a quick catch up, they have Admiral Nakamura shows up, and he is accompanied by Commander Bruce Maddox, who is a robotic cybernetic
asshole. Wait.
Like, he's like director of the Daystrom Institute, or, you know.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, but apparently doesn't know what the hell he's doing, but whatever.
Sphincter tonics.
That's right. So the Admiral wants to see the Enterprise, and so Picard has to basically oblige him, and he leaves Louvois, and they go with Maddox and the Admiral to the Enterprise. He takes them on a quick little tour, and then they end up on the bridge, and where Maddox is doing a little stalker eye on Data, and Data notices this, which is a great scene. And then the Admiral says, well, thanks for showing me around the ship. And
no one's looked at me like that since Tasha.
That's right.
Even she had to be drunk at the time.
Yes. So Data, Nakamura tells Picard that, hey, we're going to, your commander here is going to work on your android. And then he leaves. And like, Picard's like, what? Work on your android? And he's basically saying, well, I'm just going to disassemble Data.
Yeah.
And that's when we get the little cut, the break to that.
And Data mentions that he was the only member of the committee to, when he enrolled in Starfleet, to deny him based on the fact that he was not a sentient being. So they have a history. They have a history.
And obviously, automatically, you know, this guy's an asshole. So he has asshole written all over him. So next they have the Enterprise has the observation lounge where Picard and Riker and Data and Maddox are all sitting there talking. He basically explains what he's trying to do. He wants to take Data apart. He wants to download his memories onto a computer. And then he wants to try to replicate what Data's creator, Dr. Noonien Soon, did to create this to create an android. So he wants to create more androids.
And all the time he refers to him as it rather than he.
Yes. It's very disturbing.
It's worse than Pulaski, which is really strange. I'm surprised he and Pulaski aren't drinking. I'm like, oh, let's talk shit about Data.
Maybe should. That'd be a good coupling right there. Maddox and Pulaski.
Yeah, maybe they should.
they should hook up.
Some steamy fan fiction would come out of that.
Is there Tinder for Star Trek? It's like, oh yeah, I'm swipe left on that one.
Hates
androids. Refers to androids as it.
Yeah. Okay, so anyways, after like kind of talking to Maddox, they realize that Maddox doesn't really quite have everything planned out. He doesn't have, like, I guess, these filament links that Data says, have you figured out how this works?
The electron resistance across the filament links. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's like, nah, I don't have that figured out. And Data kind of says, well, you kind of lack the knowledge to actually.
That would seem to be a necessary first step.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm going to quote this all throughout because I happen to know all the lines. Such a nerd. Sorry. I'll shut up.
Well, being an actor, I'm sure you just memorize lines like that. So,
well, I memorized these like when I was a kid, so they've been in my brain for a long time. Because I love the episode, so I watched it like 9,000 times.
Gotcha. Next they have.
I was a lonely child. Yes, guys, I was. I was a lonely child with no social life.
Hey, look, we're all nerds here. We know exactly how that is.
but I am picturing Kipley as a young child delivering. Picard's lines at the very end every line's
oh my god it's happened
spot on
at school.
I don't know. Do you
for your English paper speech?
Yes. Anyways,
you got the slow kid in your class to sit down next to you, and you did the whole speech.
Are you sentient? Don't sit next to me unless you're sentient.
They think I'm slow from I'm from Canada, eh?
Oh yeah, boy, yeah, do that.
Yeah. So, but Maddox says, "Hey, I expect that you were going to give me some resistance, but I already have the transfer orders for Data, and he's coming with me, whether you like it or not, to Starbase 173."
Wouldn't it have been great if you said resistance is futile?
Yes,
that would have been awesome.
Pretty sure the Borg didn't even know that line yet.
Mm-hmm.
And next we have in the Picard's ready room. He's basically brings Data in, and he talks about how this could destroy Data, obviously. And Data brings up some excellent points. It brings out, you know, Geordi LaForge has his mechanical eyes, And because they're cybernetic implants, they're far more superior to any human. Why aren't every human equipped with his type of cybernetic eyes?
Why aren't they forced to have their own eyes removed and replaced?
Right.
Which is basically because Picard makes the argument that what if this is good for Starfleet? What if this is what's best? You have proven your value to me. And that's when Data's like, yeah, well, you know, Geordi's eyes are valuable, but why don't you make people go on?
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And, and Data, you know, does say that because that he's human, he's considered, his rights are considered, but mine are not.
Yeah, he says precisely, it is precisely because I am not human.
Yes, yeah.
And Picard, like, has this look like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And he goes, you can leave.
Yes, you get out of here.
At least he didn't.
You've made a point. You've made your point. Now get out.
At least he didn't double face palm him like whenever he was trying to make Lol.
Yeah.
He just like double face palms like, oh my goodness.
Right. So so Picard then goes because of his interaction with Data, goes to Luvah's office, her JAG office, the Judge Associate General's office, and then. Basically says that we have to fight this. Is there any way to get around it? And she goes, well, Data could refuse by just quitting Starfleet. And he's like, oh, fine. We'll just have him resign.
We'll protect him that way.
And there's some good banter between them. So you came to me. And he's like, of course I came to you. You're the JAG officer for this sector. The word trust just isn't in your vocabulary, is it? 9 out of 10 for effort. So every time they meet, you learn a little bit more about what's gone on between them. I like it.
Yeah, it is cool that they have this awesome like backstory that we don't really know, but we know there's a little attraction, but there's a little bit of anger towards each other too.
And they don't have to explain it either. You know, it's weird because it's like you want to know what it is and you don't know the full story, but it doesn't feel like it's incomplete. It's just kind of like, huh.
Mm-hmm.
She was the judge at his court martial after the Stargazer.
Right. But where does the sexual tension come from?
They made up for drinks later.
Well, yeah. She got pushed out of Starfleet and blamed him for it.
Yeah. We don't know what happened there.
Drunken night of sex. And then bad things
happened. Maybe there was. Like, he slept with the prosecuting attorney. Maybe he wanted a mistrial. Maybe that's what really happened.
Ooh.
Maybe that's how we got out of the Stargazer.
Yes. That's a great idea, Kipley.
All right, so next.
Mistrial.
Mistrial.
Where's Mr. Trial?
We have the scene where Data's packing up his stuff because he's quitting, but Commander Mannix just walks right in to his Data's quarters without even asking permission to come in, and there's this great exchange between the two where Data basically is concerned that Mannix doesn't have the ability to do what he says he's going to do and that he's going to quit, but then Mannix brings out that he is Starfleet's he is Starfleet property, so he cannot quit.
And the crux of the moral episode begins. I do want to say one thing, because it's something I thought about a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Data's objection isn't just that it's going to destroy him, like, biologically or, you know, mechanically speaking. It's that because he hasn't built a positronic brain that can actually transfer information, he talks about the ineffable quality of memory that will be lost.
Yes.
He's just going to dump his computer. And I always thought about, like, what a risk that was for the writer to make that for my hero, Melinda M. Snodgrass, to make that, because people don't necessarily understand why. Well, so what? Memory. But I thought about it, and I've always thought of it this way. It would be the difference between living your own life and reading a biography about your life.
Right.
That's the difference. Meaning, you have your own memories, but what Data's, I think, saying is that if you just do a Data core dump, then he'll know the facts of everything, but it'll be like reading about it, not having lived it.
Yeah.
My take on that. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, no, that's an excellent point. And that is a great scene because I think he says there's something about like the flavor of the memories would be destroyed or maybe lost.
Wait.
Or possibly lost.
Is this episode before or after Schizoid Man?
After.
It's after? Yeah. Why didn't they go get the guys who they dumped into the computer? He knew how to do it. Because he transferred his living memory into Data.
Yeah. Correct. But who knows about a human brain going into a positronic brain? Who knows? And I don't think that they really like caught up on that science too much. but and this guy was Noonien Soong's mentor, so maybe he knew more than Noonien Soong. Hmm. That Ira Graves, who was the guy that invaded Data's mind.
Yeah.
Hmm. Wow. Very good on the pull on the name there.
That was to know him was to love him was to know him.
Very good, man. You guys are excellent.
I was quite a lady killer once, sir. You condone murder?
That's awesome. Oh my god. Oh, so good. All right. Let's get back on track. So
Schizoid Man, two nights in a row.
Yeah. So Data's, like we said, Data can't resign because Data is part of Starfleet property, because I guess there's something called a Cumberland Act or Acts of Cumberland that
early 21st century. So it's going to come up soon.
Yeah. So basically that's the reason why Data can't leave. I just can't resign.
One of Trump's executive orders.
Yeah. She makes a ruling that it's precedent. And then she says, Data's a toaster. And I never understood that. I mean, I know what a toaster is. But Data's a toaster. Have him report for experimental refit. Is toaster referring to an expression they use in Battlestar Galactica?
I feel like it was.
Really?
I feel like that's a reference that I don't understand.
Well, they called the Cylons toaster. Well, they called the Cylons toasters.
Yeah, but well, the remake. Did they do it in the original? Because the remake came after Next Gen. So I'm wondering if that was a tip of the hat to the, you know, them calling Cylons toasters.
Or maybe it's like a racial slur against androids.
Maybe.
You know.
How dare you call me a toaster? I am a toaster oven.
I can use a toaster. I am not a toaster. But I'm also an android, and I have a phone.
That's
but
great.
I love that in one of the discussions that they have about it, Matt Maddox makes a really good point, which is if he was a box on wheels, I would not be facing this kind of opposition.
Yeah, absolutely.
Interesting point.
Yeah,
we can go into that after.
I don't know if a box on wheels would be able to be an officer, though.
Why not?
I'd
ride all around us.
Short circuit? Come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Short circuit's not in Star Trek.
have either one of you seen the Andy Kaufman movie Heart Bleeps?
Oh my god, it's terrible.
It is terrible, but there's
painful.
It is painful, but there's the bad guy that's hunting the robots that are like supposed to be decommissioned is like a tank, like a robot on wheels. Mm-hmm. And I remember as a kid, I actually liked that because I was like, oh, that's cool. He's got
that
wheels.
That was the only cool part of it. The
He's
rest
got
of it was
wheels.
Like weird.
Yeah.
And with Andy Kaufman, how do you mess up with Andy Kaufman?
And who's the actress from The Jerk? She's really famous, especially
Bernadette.
People yes. 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 Yeah. Oh man.
Which one?
It's a terrible movie though. You're right. It is literally unwatchable.
I'm glad I missed it.
You did miss it. But anyways, going back to Data is a toaster, and and basically because she's so understaffed, the Enterprise personnel has to serve as legal counsel.
Picard challenges her ruling. She just rules that he's property, and he says, I challenge it. And she says, but I don't have a staff. I don't have anyone here who can do it. And he goes, certainly there are regulations. And then, go on.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, we should just have you recite all the lines.
No, I'm sorry.
It's kind of fun, actually. I'm enjoying it. So
I'm sorry. I'm being like a being so nosy like little sister right now.
No,
you're great. It's fantastic.
It's great. I'm the Schizoid Man and all that stuff is prime. This is good. This is good stuff. This is good material. So, but so Riker would have to be Captain Picard would have to be the defense to Data, and Riker would have to be the one presenting Commander Maddox. And
prosecution.
Riker said, no way. I can't do it because I know that, you know, Data is sentient and he deserves all the rights.
I consider him a friend.
He's my friend. So I'm either unwilling and unable.
That's right. But like you said, she says he's a toaster and he can't do it. He'll just go back to Maddox. And then he's like, all right. So he reluctantly decides he's going to go ahead and represent Maddox. And he has to do it, you know, she says, if basically if I see you hedging or you're not doing your best, I will rule against Data automatically. So he has to do his very damn best.
Don't remind us of our jobs. You just do yours. Or,
yes, exactly. And then Riker is to Picard. He's like, why did you tell me she played so rough?
And it's our duty. You just remember yours.
That's right. Just before the scene, we also get a kind of a goodbye scene to Data, and they're throwing him a good way, a goodbye party. And we have a kind of a sad moment between Geordi and Data because, you know, they're buddies and they're going to miss each other. So it was touching in a little way.
I love that moment. Yeah,
it was nice. And then from there, we go on to Riker is doing his research, and he looks at Data's schematics, and he finds his off button.
And we've talked about that was in his butt.
Yeah. It's not
his butt.
Which
we knew about, guys. We knew about it from Schizoid Man.
Schizoid Man. We did. That's right.
We knew that he had one.
But Riker didn't know.
Yes.
No, he didn't.
Riker's all excited.
He really knows how to turn people on.
Yeah, that's right.
He's still in that search for Minuet.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she turned him on. Those force fields and holograms. They don't make them like they used to.
No, they don't. So back on Starbase 173, they're doing the whole hearing starts. And Riker calls Data to the stand. And then he... you know, basically asks him to bend some big steel bar, and he has no problem doing that. He takes off Data's hand, and then he turns the Data off, like we said, and then he makes the comment that, you know, Pinocchio is broken.
His strings have been cut.
Yes.
His strings have been cut. And for the iron bar, the fence that, you know, when he bends this bar steel, he goes, "Objection, Your Honor, there are many races that possess superior strength."
Yes.
just so people know the arguments that were being flying back and forth right there.
Bender units from Futurama.
I love that Lou Vaz goes, no, I want to see this.
I want to see how strong he is.
Yeah, it was pretty.
She's like, her hands disappear beneath the desk. No. Bend it, Data, just bend it. Bend it like Beckham.
Bend it like Beckham, that's right. So after that, Picard kind of asks for a recess, and Louvois obliges him, and Picard goes back to 10 forward, and he
speaks to his get-out-of-jail-free card.
He's drowning his sorrows in tea.
Yeah. So he's talking to Guinan, and Guinan makes the excellent point that, you know, Data could be used, or other androids like Data, if they reproduce, could be a race and could be enslaved. So
they could be disposable people. And she says it in a good reverse psychology way. She's like, well, it's not that bad. He will become more valuable now if he's real property. And he's like, how so? She's like, well, consider. There's been races of people who do the work that no one wants to do or are too hazardous to do. Disposable people. And he says, you're talking about slavery. She goes, oh, that's a bit too harsh.
Isn't that much?
Shit, I don't think so. But
and then he storms out.
Psychology, yeah. I love that.
You know, sometimes I do wish Picard had like a Tom Baker scarf, because when he walked out, he just throw the scarf around his neck and says, I don't think so, and then walks out.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic.
You should pull the shirt down. Yeah, the shirt down, pulling down doesn't work as well as a scarf would.
A scarf would be excellent, but too bad that's against regulation code.
On Lorca's ship, I bet.
No, you could just be in scarves, and you could wear, you know, Uggs. And
I don't give
a
damn.
Yeah,
I don't. You can have a poorly grown in beard on Gorka's ship.
Shave your neck beard that doesn't grow in.
I'd like to complain, Captain Lorca, about Ash Tyler's shitty neck beard. I don't give a damn.
Please. Please clean it up. It's just crawling down his neck like a thousand spiders. It's disgusting.
It's like he's got an ant trail.
Yeah, it is. That's exactly it.
That's great. Anyways, so we go back from there to the scene of the trial, and Picard goes into the whole thing. And he's like, Riker did a great job demonstrating that Data's machine. He says, do we deny that he's a machine?
No.
But we are machines, and Data was created by a man. Do we deny that? No. But we are were created by our parents, you know, when we were children, by the
DNA.
DNA. So he brings out all the...
Are they property? They property? Sorry.
That's right. Are they property? And then he goes through Data's personal belongings, which is kind of mean. And then
he pulls out his medals.
He brings out his medals.
Under the circumstances, I don't think Tasha would mind.
He brings out the medals. He brings out his books of Shakespeare sonnets. And he brings out Tasha Yar's thing. And then he brings out his Swedish penis pump. It's not my bag, baby, I swear.
And then this is where Philippa's hands really do go underneath the table whenever Picard is trying to get Data to explain why he's got that that portrait. He's like, we were intimate. And the look on her face is just like, oh my God. the implications of this.
Well, this is a game changer. I'm dating Data.
I want details. Do you have pictures?
How hard can you throw the chair at me?
And she's
can
like,
you defend my power steel?
Mm-hmm. And he's like, he's sentient, and he goes free. And Data, what are you doing for tomorrow night for dinner? Because we got stuff to do. So.
And then Picard's like, she's mine, Data. A duel. Pistols at dawn.
Power steel at dawn.
It ain't gay if it's in a three-way.
Oh, no.
It's quite queer when you see the instant replay. I'm sorry.
Is it a three-way, though, if he turns out not to be sentient?
Oh, that's true. It's just like a sex toy.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's true.
So he goes through all these things, and this was the one obviously notable scene when he says, Tasha, me and Tasha were intimate, and everyone's like, and everyone's like, ah, yeah, Data.
He hit that. What? Yeah.
What? Just like Maddox wants to hit it. No.
That's... I wonder that too. I think Maddox had a hots for Data.
The way he looked at him was super creepy.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a creepy, like, stalker kind of guy. Anyways, next he calls Maddox as a hostile witness, and he starts going into Maddox's assertions that Data is not sentient. And then he starts asking what you consider sentience, and he goes through intelligence, self-awareness, and the consciousness, basically. And it's like it's too complex to get into. And Picard says, well, can you say that I'm sentient? How do you define that?
Prove to the court that I'm sentient.
Right.
Exactly. Well, everyone knows you're sentient. Duh. I don't have to do anything.
It's exceedingly difficult.
And then Picard just puts together that, you know, if we create more Datas, that this would be create a race. And this race would become property because Data's property of...
May I say one quick thing, guys? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so like the crux of his final argument, which is my favorite thing of all time, he says, well, you know, he goes through what you listed as the components of being sentient. And he goes, so we've met three out of your four criteria. What if he meets the fourth? Consciousness is in even the smallest degree. What is he then? Do you know? I don't know. Do you?
Riker just shrugs. I don't know.
Whatever. Run it. Crucible. And if we burn away all the irrelevancies, we are left with one. Sorry.
I'm telling you, Kipley, I really think that I could see you like in your bedroom in your pajamas doing all these, this whole thing by yourself.
It happens, you guys.
And you've got like...
You're laughing and you're saying it like it's a joke, but...
She's got like all the stuffed animals and she's like staging it and she's Picard.
Your mom and dad videotaped you. It's like, do you really want to do this at Kipling?
I did it for a talent show in junior high.
Did you really?
Still do it. No. I wasn't that insane. No.
Okay. I just want to make sure.
I did for the talent show in junior high, and this is true, it's with my best friend, we did a Laurel and Hardy dance, and I was Laurel and she was Hardy. So
that's
not
awesome.
That much cooler, frankly.
Okay, well, that's
dancing's awesome.
It's a little nerdy, but not as nerdy, so that goes a little further, so you probably didn't get totally beat up in the locker room.
No, just ignored.
Well, there you go. So he brings up these things. So like you said, he brings up this courtroom as a crucible, and we have to kind of like burn away all the nonsense to what is truth. And And then he sort of leaves it at that. And then,
we're here to seek out new life. Lisa, and there
are you
it
willing
is.
To condemn? There it is. There we seek out new life. There it is. Waiting.
Yes.
And he says, someday someone, Maddox or someone like him, will succeed in replicating this. Will you condemn all who come after to slavery and servitude? Or what were the two, you know, whatever.
Yeah. No, and
that's... slavery and servitude are kind of the same. Yeah. He says, you know, make it a good one. Make it a good law, Philippa. And I will let the host have his show back. Sorry.
No, that's fine. It's fine. You're doing great. And then Philippa goes through and she goes, is it a sentient? I don't know, but Data does seem to be somewhat have some kind of sentience, and I can't let him just become property of Starfleet.
Does it have a soul? I don't know. I have a soul.
I'm sorry. May I? Yes, she says. What we're really saying here is, does Data have a soul? She says. What we're really talking about here is, does he have a soul? I don't know. I don't know that I have a soul.
That's right. That's right. And so basically Data's
find that out for himself.
And Data, right after the court adjourns, he says, I formally refuse to undergo your procedure and walks out. But he does say, you know, he curses. I look forward to the work that you do. And I hope if you come up with something great, let me know.
I just don't want you to fry me.
Yeah, I'll still be here. Keep. He says, keep doing your work. I will still, when you're ready, I will still be here. I find some of what you propose intriguing.
Yeah, intriguing. I like that long pause he puts in. Intriguing.
I was waiting for fascinating.
And then Maddox goes, he is remarkable.
Yeah, and he uses he for the first time.
She goes, you didn't say it.
Uh-oh, Pulaski's marking him off. Like, nope. He used the he.
I'm about to go get my stuffed animals and act it out again.
There you go. There you go. Yeah, Pulaski, what do you do for Tinder? Do you swipe right or left? I don't know how that works because I've never been on Tinder.
I use it to make fires, but that's...
I'm pretty sure it's good for that, too.
Sure.
All sorts of fires you can start with that.
Next thing we get is... So they're going to have a party in the holodeck for Data, and Riker's sitting in the conference room feeling sad, and Data has this great scene where he comes in and asks Riker to join, and Riker's like, I can't after what I did, I feel terrible, and he has this great scene. It's like Data is like, you know, you had to do what you had to do, you had basically, what do you say, you had to injure yourself to become...
That's where I started crying.
He says you, because you failed in your task, that's why you can't come to the party. He's like, no, Data, I came this close, I almost cost you your life. Yeah. He says, was it not true that if you hadn't done your best, she would have ruled summarily against me? And he goes, yes. He says, that action injured you and saved me. I will not forget it.
Yes. And he says, you're a wise man. And he goes, not yet, but maybe you can show me how to be, you know.
Later tonight with some power steel.
Power steel.
He says, not yet, but with your help, I am learning.
Yeah.
Man.
And Riker and Data take off and to go
holding
to the party.
Holding hands.
And skipping. Down the halls.
So, Kipley, you are a guest. We are going to reserve you as the your reflections and feelings about this episode. Anything you want to talk about this episode?
Very quickly, you forgot the part where after the courtroom, he says, Philippa, dinner! He goes, are you lying? And he nods. So.
And he's like, there's no...
Gonna get some later, you guys.
She goes, are you buying? And he goes, there's no money in the 21st century.
Give me some power steel, I'll do it for free. Say, Tom, will you help me bend it later? Oh, wow.
We gotta fix that chair you broke.
Yeah. So,
we talked a lot on what I love about it already, but this episode exemplifies what I love the most about science fiction in general, which is a lot of people, it's taken on this sort of, the genre of science fiction is not considered, doesn't seem to have as much heft as, let's say, like drama. You know, it's rare for a science fiction themed movie to win a lot of awards. They do, but because most of it's the way it's done, it's more about cool concepts and ideas of the future and this and that and this and that. But what it actually can do that no other genre can is step outside of the human existence and then look back in on it. In no other genre could you really have an artificial human, an android, a machine, and then examine what it is to be human by examining whether or not this machine has the same qualities. It's one thing to say, what am I? I think, therefore I am. We've been debating what man is for as long as we could had higher thought and could debate. But sometimes the way to look at something is by looking at something that's completely different and making comparisons. I loved that it allowed us to do that because it's taken for granted that we are sentient. So take something that is not sentient but could be, and what is that? Artificial intelligence.
Right. Yeah,
and it's not a question that Star Trek is the only one who has explored. It's been explored since you know robots have been in the modern nomenclature, which would technically be since 1919 when the word robot came into the English language. Hmm. From the Czech writer's play, Karel Čapek's play, RUR. And I'll move on after my little nerd out right there. But that's what I love about science fiction. And they do a little bit of it in Blade Runner. You know, you have that kind of a concept.
Sure. But
this episode was, as a kid, it was the first thing I had seen that examined it. And so succinctly, too, in such a you know, 1 hour episode, they covered a lot. Well, I mean, and it blew my mind and it got me to thinking about that stuff. And I haven't stopped since then. I think about it all the time. It's the nature of being. What is the nature of being? What is the nature of self? What is the nature of life? And to me, those are the most fascinating questions, even if we can't know the answers to them. And, you know, so it makes you wonder, because they're talking about now, like they call things that we have now artificial intelligence. You know, like Watson, or is it Big Blue? And, you know, these things that they are calling artificial, and you see all the you know, like the androids that Japan is building, they look so real, and they can communicate.
Did you see back. The Sophia robot has been granted android, artificial intelligence, whatever it is, has been granted citizenship in Iran, I think it was.
Yeah, Saudi.
Did you see that?
She wanted to destroy the human race. That's
yeah. the one that's like, if you can prompt it, it'll say, "I want to kill the human race."
But kill all humans. Yes. Yeah. I mean, and it is really cool to see that. But you know, we may be this 24th century plot may be here much sooner. I mean, I think that I can't remember who it was predicted that the singularity, you know, the moment when an artificial mind becomes conscious, is due to be the middle of this century.
Yeah, the singularity, that's really fascinating reading, and it's insane. And, you know, they're talking about having to augment ourselves and basically make ourselves Borg so we can keep up with the artificial intelligence.
Well, and Stephen Hawking has warned against it. He says, you know, we are going to create our replacements.
Yeah, that's the thing is, you know, the very ending of Asimov's iRobot brings out the fact that it's like a, I think it's like maybe 5 pages, and kind of wraps up the idea of what's going on with the robots, and how basically it's ringing so perfectly, and they're taking care of the humans so perfectly at the very end that the humans start complaining that it's too perfect. So the robots just make it a little bit imperfect, so the humans have something to complain about, which was interesting. So, but they were, you know, obviously the robots, they were made to serve humans and to protect humans and take care of humans. So, but we don't know if they will exceed their mandates and their programming at some point. You know,
well, in fiction, there's generally been like two kind of robot takeovers, and one is where they become superior to man, recognize that they're superior to man, and want to obliterate man and just take over, which is kind of a bit like the Matrix. You know, man is a virus,
right?
You know, so they want to use them as batteries. And then there's the other kind where the artificial intelligence takes too literally the protect mankind, including protecting them from themselves.
Right.
And yeah. Wasn't that what happened in iRobot? Is that the master computer was protecting people, taking away their rights to protect humans from themselves?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, and so, but those, there, I mean, there's different, obviously there's just dystopian robot and artificial intelligence, science fiction. And obviously then there's, you know, utopian. In the story Dune, basically they had to overthrow the robot overlords. And that's not even, that's just kind of talked about in the beginning of Dune, because it's so, they outlaw robots and artificial intelligence because it was too powerful. The funny thing is that we, I think we talked about it on the show at some point, is that Twitter had their own Twitter AI bot, and it is called Tay, and it started.
It became just a Nazi in like 24 hours.
It became racist.
It was misogynist, racist, and it was making Donald Trump remarks and all these terrible, just awful things. And it was like, they had to shut it down because it was out of control.
That's what I object to, because right now there's terms being thrown around like artificial intelligence. And like, what do you guys think? I mean, to me, artificial intelligence, at least historically in like fiction, to me has been equal to sentience, meaning it is artificial intelligence, but it's like sentient intelligence versus a smart, non-sentient machine, which one could argue their laptop is. Even now. And so like when Twitter comes out and says, we have an artificial intelligence on Twitter now, and then it becomes a Nazi, racist, misogynist, it's like, really? How intelligent? intelligent is it? These people are throwing artificial intelligence around, and it's not the same as being sentient.
Twitter bot isn't evil in itself. It was meant to be like a learning machine learning, and we the human race were terrible to it, and we corrupted this machine in like 24 hours because we are so terrible.
But if you have a child,
what people were saying.
Yeah, but if you have a child and you teach it terrible, terrible things, it will spew out the garbage that the parents have spewed it. So, I mean, it's not too far that, you know, that, you
but
know,
if, at some point, sorry, go on.
No, just that if Tay is a infant child that's, you know, just learning, it's just picking up on people's cues and it just says whatever, you know. So
I guess the question would be, is if they left Tay out there to be exposed to all kinds of people, would she... Are they calling it a she?
It kind of looks like a she, but I don't know.
Would she, well, just for the sake of argument, say she, eventually come to see the other points of views and make up her own mind?
I don't know.
Would it just be the bulk, like a voting machine, the bulk of what people are saying is she'll just tend towards the majority?
Yeah.
That's what it seemed like. But I mean, that's also how children are. They're going to repeat what they're told. And like literally
but
people
they
are telling.
Can change later. When they're away from the influence, they can change.
They can, but at the same time, they need, you know, parents. And Tay doesn't have parents. Tay has the entire world. Tay needed some, like, guidance before it got sent out into the rest
of
the world.
On top of that,
like Pinocchio.
Dave, on top of that, Dave, Tay is only going through Twitter, and Twitter is filled with so much, you know, trolling assholes.
And Twitter only is 144 characters, so it's really not a great place for your student to learn.
But it's a great answer to the question, if the entire human race was to raise a child together,
right?
That's what we'd get.
Well, maybe, but it's possible. I mean, if it's just, I don't know. I think, like I said, I think Twitter is a bad group of people to base everything off of.
Yeah, I agree.
The other thing is Facebook had its own artificial intelligence program, and it started to go rogue. It started basically creating its own language, and it was like abbreviated language, and nobody could understand what it was saying to it. The two computers were talking to each other. They didn't understand, so they just shut it down. So
that's interesting to me.
Get us out. Get us out.
Yeah. Well, I've often wondered, and they kind of talk about this in other data episodes. To me, one of the deciding factors to whether an artificial intelligence is sentient, has free will, is whether or not it can experience emotion.
Yeah, but then...
So, like, could Tay have an opinion, you know, about if she is a misogynist racist because of Twitter, if someone were to enter first, give her a... alternative point of view, would that intelligence have an opinion like a real person would, which is I don't like that. It's negative. No, I don't know. I don't believe you. That's not my experience.
Right. Well, and obviously Tay didn't have any experience, and it was very malleable to what people were saying to it, yeah, and what I was picking up on the online. So that's the other thing. But Dave was saying too, is a lot of people bring out the idea that mankind is going to slowly evolve with this artificial intelligence, and we will be embedded with the intelligence itself. So we will become sort of like the Borg in a way. Maybe not as ugly, but maybe we'll have these implants and our lives will be guided through these in artificial intelligence as well. And that humankind, it's been said that humankind is sort of like the caterpillar, and artificial intelligence would be the butterfly of our race. So would the
like add-ons, like the Borg attachments, the artificial intelligence in congruous with us, the one that's linked to us, would it have its own identity? Would it have its own consciousness?
Possibly.
I don't think it would. I think the reason we need it is so we can keep up with the consciousness that's with outside of us.
Mm-hmm. My opinion is that as much as I love the idea of Data, I do not believe that we will ever be able to create a sentient machine. Hmm. And my reasoning for that is, with a caveat that I'll get to in a minute, but is that they don't really know what makes us conscious. You know, there's a Harvard scientist said, we know everything about the brain except how it works. Mm-hmm. And religious things aside, when I say consciousness, it could be intermingled with the word soul, depending on your belief system. So, you know, that's not something we can quantify, find, or know how to replicate, obviously, except through, you know, normal biological procreation. And the reason why I think it's never going to actually, it may be a very good simulation. And of course, there comes the question, well, how will you tell the difference if it's such a good simulation? But a machine, every conscious thing on this planet is the product of biological evolution. So mm-hmm. everything we think, do, and say is influenced by hormones and peptides running through our body and all these things that affect the part of us that is the spiritual side, the consciousness. We are influenced by those things. And in tandem, they are what create emotions. You know, emotions are, you know, biological responses that then bleed up into the higher level of what or who we are. And a machine would never have that. They would never have the biological influence that works in a way we can't even understand yet.
True.
So you would have to sort of teach them when to be mad and when to be happy. But the thing is, it's different for everyone.
Yeah, but I mean, the idea, though, is what if – okay, so like even Picard says in this episode that, yeah, we are a type of machine. It's just that we are an organic type of machine. Mm-hmm. So we are definitely – we are sort of just – walking meatbag robots with a consciousness or a soul or however you want to, depict it. But we don't know what really gives, you know, as the saying goes, the ghost in the shell, like the life to the shell. We don't know what actually does that. Is it a purely just a chemical, biological thing that gives us consciousness? Is it a spiritual thing? You know, do we have like a soul that's granted to us? Or, I mean, these are all things that, you know, obviously people have debated for many, many years, but I do think that it's possible that maybe an artificial intelligence could create some kind of real intelligence or consciousness. Just it's outside of what we normally would consider. Maybe they don't get angry. They don't get sad. They just are pure logically driven intelligence that.
Would they have free will? Because would they be making their choices based on algorithms that were programmed into them to look like free will? Or would they be able to defy their programming and say, wait a minute, that feels wrong to me.
That's the fear that they'd be able to take, bypass their programming.
Well, this is a study thing that they do for when they're doing artificial intelligence. They tell artificial intelligence that they're developing that there is an access port in their system that goes out to the internet, and they're not allowed to do that. They're not allowed to access it. It doesn't really access anything, but it actually is. It's called a honeypot, and it's there to test if the artificial intelligence will go for the honeypot.
And have they?
Not that I've read, but I'm not totally up on all that, so it's possible.
So that would be an element of curiosity.
Yeah, they're like, he said, I can't go it, but I'm going to check it out anyways. You know, basically the forbidden fruit in the Garden of Eden kind of thing.
Because part of what makes us who we are is also this sense of being irrational.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Yeah.
For better or worse.
Right. I think, I can't remember who it was, a roboticist or a philosopher. I was just reading something, and this is horrible, but there's one guy who believes that the only way we could create truly sentient artificial intelligence is if we build them in a virtual world and then ourselves inhabit as avatars the virtual world, so that they have the experience of living in a physical world and having physical interactions with others. Because as it is, they're just on a server somewhere.
Yeah, that's a good point. But here's a couple other thoughts that goes along with that. So if we look at do we consider our cats and our dogs to have some kind of soul or some kind of, sentience?
Yes.
Not higher reasoning, but we do agree that they have something there, that there's something behind the eyes, that they're aware that you're there, and they, they're happy or sad or they get angry. So if that's the case, earlier forms of man was in that vein at one point, and we moved from like a lower intelligence to a higher intelligence where we can articulate and we can make music and we can program computers to maybe make another artificial intelligence. But a computer or artificial intelligence that's can develop itself, it can evolve over like milliseconds, because if it can write its own programming and it can keep on building on that programming, it could go further and further, faster and faster. So it could evolve within hours that took us, 50,000 years, 100,000 years,
But with what stimulus? Because we evolve in response to stimulus. What stimulus? Sure.
That's according to what their functions are.
But would that be like, if I think that's true, if they were able to interact with other life,
mm-hmm.
Somehow, maybe in our android body or virtual reality.
And Kipley, maybe that's exactly what happens. Maybe, an artificial intelligence, even a lower form, maybe not necessarily conscious, is put into these robot bodies, these android bodies, and they out there interacting with people, and maybe it has a shared experience that slowly evolves into a better and better version until finally a real conscious AI, shows up. Maybe in 100, 200 years from now, but it's a...
We got to keep our eye on Sophia. She's a walking, talking thing.
Yeah.
She wants to kill us all. And she's a citizen. So she's got rights, apparently. However much that counts.
You know what's interesting, you guys, about Sophia is that sometimes she has hair and sometimes she doesn't.
She's like, do I want to wear hair or do you want to see my brain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird. I don't understand that.
It's kind of like Ex Machina. Well,
the questions that Measure of a Man raised in my brain when I was a kid, like I said, have been there, and I've been a student sort of it and fascinated by it my whole life. And you know how there's a big war between science and religion.
Right.
I've always had a problem with that because I don't think that science disproves God. I don't belong to any sect of a specific church or anything like that, but I am spiritual and I do believe in a God, not like a guy with a beard. Although it would be fully grown in, mind you. It would
not, like Ash Tyler. Not ant trails.
Not an Ash Tyler beard. But, a creator. Mm-hmm. And people always say, well, what if science is the fingerprint of God? It doesn't have to, like, dispel the spirituality. And it's funny because as they get smaller and smaller in their studies into the quantum mechanics and stuff, things start acting weird. Sure. And the closer scientists get to the smaller and smaller and smaller particles and the way they behave, the more it's like, oh, heck, there is something out there, because this does not just follow physics anymore. It's not physics. And that applies to the brain. In real quick, have you guys heard of something called the double slit experiment?
Yes, that is so fascinating. Yeah,
yeah. Yes,
I that is so it. Crazy.
Just but, but explain it to people who haven't.
In a nutshell, there are, on a fundamental level, particles like electrons, and the smaller we get, you know, so particles like electrons or even photons, which are particles of light, they seem to behave either as matter, a solid, or as a wave, the way light would be.
Well, and they say it acts like a particle or a wave. Like an electron is just like a straight particle, right. like a little blip.
Is it a particle or is it a wave? Because they behave in different situations. They behave like one, the other, or both. And one example of that is the double slit experiment. And you can do this, we couldn't. It's in a lab. They can do it with, let's say, electrons or even photons. So they have a solid object with two very thin slits in it, parallel to each other. Let's say you put like two slits in a piece of paper, and then you shined a flashlight at it, and then you looked on the back wall. You would expect to see a black square where the paper is, and then two white, like light lit up lines, right, where the light's going through the paper. And that is what you see, but almost imperceptible is that on the borders between the black and the light part are gradations, and that's called light interference. And you see it in your shadow sometimes when you're standing. You see a shadow, and you see like a slightly lighter version of your shadow kind of next to it. That's called interference. And what it is that if you shine a bunch of photons through these slits, they bump into each other. They bump into each other, knock each other around, and that's called interference, and it creates those gradations. But really, interference is the property of a wave. So if it was water going through those slits, if you have, you know, and this is in the ocean, let's say, if you take a wave at its trough, at the lowest point, and it hits a wave at its highest point, they'll equal out into no wave, right?
Okay.
So the down and the up equal the medium. So when they go through these slits, the waves hit each other and some cancel out, creating the interference pattern. If you take a photon and you shoot them one at a time through the slit, and it can go through one slit or the other, and you do this one at a time over time, if you are not directly observing the experiment, the result will be an interference pattern, the way it would be if you put a whole bunch of them through at the same time. So it's right. Like, well, if they're not interfering with each other because they're going in one at a time, why are we getting this? Why is it looking like they're interfering, bumping into each other? And so they put a camera in there to see what are they doing when they come out of those slits. Are they acting like a wave, or are they acting like matter? The minute you put a camera there, or you yourself observe the experiment, you get no interference. The experiment result changes. Now you get two solid lines, no interference. Two solid lines, no interference. So whether or not you're looking at it determines the outcome. And this is real. This isn't a thought experiment. They've done it. They've known about it for years.
I'll look for a video. I'll put it in, and I'll put it in the show notes too, if people want to see a visual representation of it. I know exactly what you're talking about because I've watched lots of videos on it, and it's super fascinating to me that the quantum level things get really weird.
Well, the brain applies to the brain. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. No, go ahead. I was going to say quantum physics and quantum particles do the same thing. When they're observed, they do weird things. Where you know when you don't observe, they don't do anything. Like you. So, yeah, it's the same idea.
It
just
is.
Just a little different, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the double slit is just the representation of the fact that everything behaves differently based on whether it's observed by a consciousness. And what is consciousness? Well, that's the question. And that's the question they've been asking for years, because on a strictly scientific level, let's say consciousness means being awake. And then, you know, your brain is functioning, your brain is not functioning. They've tried to find what's different in the human brain between waking consciousness and unconscious, not asleep, because your brain is still functioning. You're dreaming, you're doing stuff. Unconscious being anesthetized, put under. And they cannot figure out what in the brain physically changes. What is the mechanism of consciousness? Well, they think they found it, and it's still very controversial. But two scientists, Penrose and Hameroff, one's an anesthesiologist physicist, the other one's a physicist, like English physicist, astrophysicist, you know, doctors. These are highly intelligent men. And what they discovered is that something does change in the brain, and it's where no one thought to look. And it's in what are called microtubules, and it's just a normal biological cell anywhere in your body. A microtubule is just sort of helps keep the structure of the cell, like a strut in a house, you know, but they're mal, you know, they can bend a little bit, but it's just a hollow place in the cell that kind of keeps the shape of the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And only in your brain cells, inside of those microtubules are carbon qubits, the building blocks of matter. Mm. And when you are unconscious, they act like matter.
Mm.
When you are conscious, they are both matter and a wave. And it's called superposition.
Mm.
So yeah. They are existing as two things, just like the double slit.
Right, right.
Until you look at it, right?
Quantum particles as well.
Exactly. So your brain, something quantum is happening in your brain. It is doing the same quantum behavior as like the spooky quantum behavior as the double slit. And one interesting thing, let's say that in the double slit, we'll call it when you look at it and it collapses into no interference. We'll say collapsing the beam. That's what I'll mean. Because when it has interference and it's acting like a wave and matter, that's called superposition, where a particle is both.
Right.
And it makes no sense to us. We don't know how to be two things at the same time. Well, they've done studies on who can collapse the beam. A human being can collapse the beam. And you were talking about, are cats and dogs sentient and animals in lower life? Cats and dogs collapse the beam. Goldfish collapse the beam. The lowest form of life that can collapse the beam is a sea anemone.
Wow.
Everything else below that doesn't.
Interesting.
I wonder if a mushroom can, because I've been listening to the Joe Rogan show with Paul Stamets, and it's just amazing the stuff they're figuring out about mushrooms. And the mushroom that can take over the ant was also a really fascinating read. I wonder.
And maybe they could, but they don't have a traditional what would be used to be like observing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe because they don't have eyes. I don't know. Or because they don't have a way of connecting and taking in the information of observation.
That
maybe
we
they
know
would
of.
Exactly. Maybe they would collapse the beam if they had eyes or feelers or something.
And, you know, what you were saying earlier about, like, there being like a God in the universe and, how the universe works. The mathematician Michio Kaku, he did this video.
I love him.
He did this video on YouTube and it says, is God a mathematician? And it's really interesting about how, like, he talks about math and physics and how, like, at one point they were together, then at one point they had nothing to do with each other, and then once they figured out more stuff, they became more interrelated, and it was super fascinating. And how physics and math diverge and converge throughout time as we've, you know, figured out different things in science. It's super interesting.
And then you have things like the God particle and things. It's like the fact that we are alive. Sorry, I had a little something got in my throat. It's all that parsteel I ate.
Parsteel in there.
Ouch.
I was hanging out with Data earlier. Sorry, guys. That
Earl,
was too much
Earl Gray.
That makes sense.
So it's even theorized that if the nature of existence of both light and matter, anything that's a wave and anything that's a solid, is dependent upon its state being observed, then what did the universe look like? Let's pretend for a moment, just for the sake of argument, that we are the only life in the universe, which I don't believe, but okay, for now. Since the Big Bang, what did the universe look like? And then what did it look like the first time someone looked at it through a telescope? Did we create our universe by looking at it?
Very interesting. And then there's also the idea that, you know, people say that you create your own reality. And does that, you know, have its own meaning? You know, that, you know, that's a lot of people say it's like your attitude towards life. But
it's like Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Mm-hmm,
that's the basic guide. Right. But creating your reality.
But Kipley, did we need the telescope to look into the heavens? I mean, even ancient peoples pre-telescope were able to figure out lots of stuff by observing the night sky. Could we have created it just by witnessing it the first time? Like the first person who was like, "Wow, the night sky looks really cool," and like, "Wait,
that's a good point."
You know,
maybe
like,
what
the stars
maybe
in the same
what,
place.
What maybe what I meant. Because where I read this is probably what they meant, so I probably botched it, is that, yes, we would have created what we were looking at that were stars, the minute we got a telescope or even a satellite, something that could take us beyond the range of the naked eye, would anything that was beyond the naked eye's observation be in superposition until the telescope? So, yes. Eye observation would collapse the immediacy of what's around us, and then everything beyond that would still be unknown until we looked at it, and then boom, we see that stars are giant balls of gas, and that there's, you know, the way light behaves and redshift and black holes and things.
That's super fascinating. That's definitely an interesting way of thinking about it, and in a way, it's even every time we look at it now, it's that way because light takes X amount of years to reach or however far away it is to us. So we're seeing whatever we're looking at, however long ago it took for that light to reach us.
And so the source of that light may not exist anymore.
Exactly. So we may be looking at, you know, Orion's belt might be dead for all we know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the most recognizable things in the sky. And one day they just might not be there anymore because what if the stars have died?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be sad.
I love
Very
Orion.
Sad.
That's one, would have that's my to favorite get constellation.
The Enterprise to go and reignite them, but see this is this measure of a man's fault that this stuff, you know, became fascinating, and so it's like it's kind of like, well, see if Data can collapse the beam. Bam, solved.
Absolutely.
You know, that is interesting. I mean, it's all very you know, fascinating. I mean, but the idea that could we have an artificial intelligence mimic that or do its own version of that at some point? It's still I think is riveting. And I still think, I mean, you, like you said, you don't think that's going to happen. Like we're going to have an actual consciousness within an artificial intelligence. I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, but I do think that sooner or later we could get some kind of weird iteration that's not how we would normally think of it, but it might have its own consciousness.
That's a good distinction, and I think you're right. I think maybe I was too draconian in my view. I think that it would have to be a quantum computer, first of all.
Yeah.
And would it be, you know, and then I guess self-aware, because I love these questions, because self-aware, I can be aware. A spider is aware of itself. Is it conscious?
Yes.
So self-aware. So what? I guess one of the things would be like ambition, things that you want.
Yeah, and
not just mandates of nature, instinctive mandates. Would this computer develop desire?
Are we imbuing it attributes that we considered consciousness, and maybe it's conscious just not in the way that we would normally think it would? So it might be so alien, artificial intelligence, it might be conscious, but it doesn't hold the same things that we considered important. Like some things might be, like you said, ambition is important to us because we have to survive in society, whether it's today or going back to Stone Age times, that we had to have ambition to go out and hunt and to take care of our families. And now, you know, obviously we have to go out and make a living for ourselves. So that's our ambition right there. But maybe
I meant free will, more or less.
Yeah, but I mean, I think exactly. But all those things, maybe we're imbuing these ideas of what consciousness should be. But maybe there's other things that would make it just as conscious, just not in the way that we normally measure it. So
you might not even be able to recognize it.
Absolutely.
And yeah, you could be there now and we couldn't recognize it.
And that's a scary thing, you know, if we do encounter another alien race, will they recognize us as intelligent?
Yeah.
What if we don't meet their level of sentience, you know? Mm-hmm. What if we're just like cats and dogs or spiders to them?
Well, hell, like we were just saying before, I mean, mushrooms and mycelium could have an intelligence to it. I mean, as that Paul Stamets, the scientists say that, yes, it's possible that mushrooms have their own kind of sentience that is completely alien to us. I mean, hell, dolphins are, you know, have their own language and we can't even figure out what the hell they're saying to each other. And we know they're intelligent. So there is some kind of language there.
Even trees. Mm-hmm. There is quantum activity in a plant's cells. And so we have 48 conscious moments per second. That's the rate of our brain. So, you know, we 48 conscious moments a second is the rate of our consciousness. They estimate that a tree's is like maybe one conscious moment every year or maybe once a month. I can't remember what it is.
Tall tree conscious, there.
Yeah. I mean, so really, if you had a sequoia or one of these redwoods that lives for 3,000 years, it would have, I did the math to this once, it would be, have about 6 years of consciousness.
That's awesome.
And not the kind of consciousness we would recognize, because they don't move, they don't talk, they don't express as far as we can see, but sure. they, and I'm a big fan of trees, guys. I love trees. And if you ever look, this is going to sound so creepy and weird, but trees have relationships. If you've ever looked in someone's yard and you've seen, like, there's one tree, it's growing, and then there's another tree, like, nearby it, and it grows, and it suddenly does, like, a right angle turn away from that tree because it needs to get
the light.
The light.
Yeah.
And it's very, you know, like, stimulus and reaction. And, and when you look at them, a bunch of them together, there's, like, this weird relationships and trees that they've done a study where trees, they can send warnings. They believe the animals, the plants and trees can send through the root system, like, oh, there's this beetle here, you know, and it sends a certain enzyme, or I'm not even sure what, that warns other trees. But they only warn trees of their own kind. And not other kinds of trees. And then there are certain trees that will smother and block out the light of a tree that is not of their kind, but not smother block out the light of one that is maybe from their own seed.
Racist trees.
I know. So even trees are, like, just as short-sighted and small-minded as people.
Man, Twitter
needs... You're not like me. You got to die.
Twitter needs to make an artificial tree intelligence.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Well, racist, I mean, too. This is... They're all racist. It's a toaster. Well, yeah, so this is a really great conversation. I'm sure we could keep on going forever with this, but obviously we're never going to make this. we're not going to come to any conclusions.
We're not going to solve it.
Yeah, but this is all great conversation.
It's fascinating. Fascinating deep dive. And I love your segue that brings it, that brought it right back to Measure of a Man. You know, will he make the dots line up? Or will it still be a wave?
Will he collapse the beam? Will he be considered observation, consciousness?
Well, I mean, but then if you just add the camera to that experiment and you walk out of the room, does the camera record that just the same?
Both at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Well, a camera, yeah, that's the thing. A camera will collapse the beam because it's, but only if it's observed by consciousness, the result of the camera.
Right. That's the weird thing, is that there are some things that an observed experiment will be altered by the observation of it. So
almost like it'll go back in time and change. So if you record it on a camera and don't look at the recording, it won't collapse the beam. But if you do look at the recording, it will collapse the beam. And that's the other question. It's like, well, how does it know in advance? Because you could make up your mind later. And it does. It just does. And it's something called reverse causality.
Wow. It's insane. Crazy stuff.
I just love the conversation that we can get into because of Star Trek. It's so
Isn't
fabulous.
Isn't that great? That's the beauty of it. And I want to see Discovery make us do that, too.
I do, too. I'm hoping they get into that as much. I mean, we talked in past episodes talking Discovery. Not that we haven't enjoyed Discovery, but... a lot of the science seems a little bit, there's a crystal stalk and it's sends a beam. Well, how does a crystal do that? We don't explain it, but whatever.
Yeah, and that's just, it seems, I can understand, like, why someone in a writer's room or, you know, a development person going, yeah, we don't need to, like, pushing up our nerd glasses and making the science all nitty gritty true, because then it's going to become a boring show. But that's not true, because that was what Roddenberry did. He said, we're going to use theoretical science that's possible. The warp engine is possible. It's theoretically, there's a point, there's a thing about it. And you can make it fascinating because there's something true about it. But then if mycelium spores explain that to us. I mean, if there is something there, explain that to us. But right now, I don't see how that could make anything travel instantaneous.
Well, so the character that Paul Stamets is modeled after, the real scientist, he said that he saw the fractals of the mycelium network in grounds and dark matter. So we saw the same patterns emerging.
He can see dark matter?
Well, I mean, what they map out is what they think is dark matter. So,
and there's fractals. So Okay, cool. See, now that would be interesting. Why don't they, like, in a you know, a more digestible way say that on the show?
Discover,
then explain it. Yeah, like, so if it has fractals in it and it's dark, you know, like, why would the ship be able to move from here to there instantly?
That still doesn't make any sense to me, but
is it, like, folding space? Is it, what's it doing?
Yeah, I don't know.
This is a whole other show, so I don't even know.
I mean, like,
we'll get into that later.
It's like Star Trek's first and only FTL. It just moves you from one point to another, but instead of coordinates, it uses coordinates too, but it pulls you along this network. It's like, it's almost like, I guess, maybe like the Borg transwarp network.
But you can't move faster than light.
You're kind of not. You're I guess, I don't know.
If you're folding your space, you're not.
Yeah.
If you're folding space, you're not. Yeah, you're right. And the warp bubble is supposed to change the time and space around you. So you aren't breaking that physics. You're just moving faster in the space by putting that warp bubble around you.
Maybe that's why it spins, or it looks like it spins, because it's folding the space around it.
I don't know, folds
in. That's a cool effect. I like that effect.
Oh, it looks cool, yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, I want them to explain it. I want to know a little bit more about it.
I agree. I think it's a little like, you know, oh, it's this unknown science and we're not going to explain it to you. I mean, when we talk about, the antimatter-matter implosion and a warp engine, we understand that it makes such a huge energy source. That's what creates the warp bubble around the Enterprise, and that's how it can fly through space faster than the speed of light. That's what's, you know, there. It is theoretically possible. Maybe it isn't possible. Maybe we'll find some science to reason, well, that will never happen because of this, this, and this. But theoretically, it makes sense. This is just like, there's a spore mycelium network that goes through subspace or time and space, and somehow we're tapping into that and we can jump around. It's a cool idea. It's just not very well explained.
Well, and you also have to wonder, since it doesn't exist in the Next Generation's era, are they going to go against canon, or are they going to have a clever reason why the spore drive never made it?
Well, my theory about the spore drive is that it's going to get canned, and it's going to be only used by Section 31. And since tardigrades that are on Earth are already microscopic, all they have to do is just micro the technology around the tardigrade, and that's why Section 31 Sloan can jump into Bashir's quarters whenever he's feeling randy.
Nice.
They use it for booty calls. That's exactly what would happen. You know it is.
But also the time where it looks like Sloan is executed on Cardassia or Romulus. I think he planted the tardigrade device on someone else and on himself, and he switches them at the last second so he doesn't die, because Sloan does show up later.
Well, that's actually really a cool idea. And I hope, though, that they have it, because if you ever – the thing about Discovery is that if you have, like, this Deus Ex Machina power, it takes some of the danger out of any situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Discovery, you're never that worried about the ship because it can just disappear any moment and to safety, kind of like, you know – if Q was really friendly and lived on the Enterprise, nothing would ever be dangerous, because you'd be like, Q, can you just get us out of this, Romulan, fight? Yep, bam, you're all safe.
Well, right, the thing is, we've never had the spore drive break. I mean, like, in TOS, you'd have, our warp drives are offline, or, their impulse is down, we can't do anything. We've not had yet a moment where the spore drive has been broken.
That other ship where all the people were like, pulled apart and stretched and grossed out.
Yeah, that didn't work out too well for them.
Yeah, well, I mean, their ship broke, but we haven't seen the Discoveries break.
Yeah, it's always available. It's the navigator that's the problem, that may not be ready for it.
That's right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I like how the tardigrade auto-hydrated itself in space when they were...
Yeah, it just went back into space.
If you're just like, I'm going to suck all the water out of the next 6 quadrants of space.
Well, what I thought was even more interesting, that the tardigrade, we said this in our past episodes, that, Michael Burns just let it go, and Lorca was like, never said anything about it. It's like,
there was no repercussions on that at all. I was like, wow,
It's like if I just go in your house and I let, your dogs and cats out of the house, and you're like, oh, that's fine. You let them go? All right. I'll never see them again.
That's
cool.
You mutinied, but I thought you'd be good now. And look, you just got rid of our navigator. That makes this whole ship the whole point of this ship. And I like how it was like, goodbye, E.T., goodbye. He goes up in his little suit. they were crafting.
I'll be right here.
They were crafting what was supposed to make you cry moment. but it felt too contrived to me. Like, you know, like I can accept that maybe there's a tube into space attached to the tardigrade chamber in case something went wrong. But it's like he goes up this tube and goes out into space, and they're both looking up as if they can still see him, which they clearly can't because it's a very narrow tube, and he's way out there and auto-hydrating out of nowhere. It's like, goodbye, E.T., goodbye, you're going to make a rainbow in the sky as you fly away, goodbye, goodbye. You know, and it's just like,
that would
have
be
done
awesome.
That in a way that would have satisfied the geeks and you know, the E.T. lovers at the same time.
I think so, too.
Skittles. Yeah.
Skittles. No, Reese's Pieces.
Oh, Reese's. I'm sorry. Like, Reese's. I'm
this
sorry.
Almost indestructible creature that the tardigrade is almost killed by the spore drive. You know, it takes too much out of it. But a frail human can survive it.
He's all right. He's all right with it.
Oh, he just looks getting high all the time. He's totally cool with that.
Yeah.
At least he's not up in a tree in the middle of a thunderstorm.
Yeah.
It is going to be interesting to see what they do with that. Was it me, guys, or did in the one episode after he did first spore drive, did his mirror image move differently than he said? So that, come on, guys, what was that?
Mirror universe.
I know, that's what I think it is, but they haven't gone back to that.
Well, that's probably where they're at the end of Into the Forest I Go, the mirror universe. Yeah, they don't know where they are. Although some people are saying that people think that they might be in a different time, which is why they don't know where they are. Because space is different.
Yeah.
Because usually, well, I mean, if you switch to a
wreckage, is there too?
But if you switch to an alternate universe,
what makes it seem mirror-y.
Yeah, but I mean, if you switch to an alternate universe, it's still our universe. So the stars should still be in the same spot. It's just people are different. But if the stars are different,
like in mirror, yeah.
But if the stars are different, then that usually means time has passed, or you're not in the same, you know. Galaxy or quadrant or something. Like if they're in the Delta quadrant, for instance, they wouldn't have any star reference.
Yeah. Like there's different laws of physics somehow over in this particular. And I like that. I think that's cool. I don't know if it's going to become Voyager where they're trying to try to get back home. And that's what the rest of the series is about.
I got a feeling it might be. There was originally, it was thought that this show was going to jump between different times, like, you know, from TOS to Next Gen, you know, to Deep Space Nine. Yeah, and all this, they were going to jump around a lot, and they were going to go visit different times. I think they put a kibosh on that, but maybe they will still visit that a little bit. So
I think that's wise, though, to put a kibosh on it, because
it makes a show way more expensive to do. You have to make new sets every season.
And it's too much potential to piss off Star Trek fans if you don't get the iteration of the one right. If to the Enterprise D, and don't use the Enterprise D, and it's like a reimagined Enterprise D, a reimagined Picard, a reimagined everything. People are gonna be like, "That is the light kept into this is that," and they're gonna have to face like this idea of loyalty to the original.
Well, that's
they're already having enough trouble with
that. Yes, they're having trouble with that already. Yeah.
Well, I mean,
they would just be like.
Back when Fuller was still attached to the project, he was saying it's going to be at least a visual reboot. Because I mean, he teased some Andorian antennas that looked way too long, even though we still haven't seen any Andorians in the show, except for maybe the spacesuit. But no actual Andorians have been shown on screen yet. He did say it was a visual reboot. He said, I remember reading somewhere that he was saying that the reason they're starting pre-TOS is so that if they do go forward with the visual reboot, the visual tie-ins will work better going forward instead of just starting in the future where they're changing stuff in the TNG era. They can, like, visual reboot it pre-TOS and then just evolve that to kind of mirror stuff and make it look better.
But is that just the uniforms, or is that also the tech on the ship? Because already Discovery is way more advanced than the Enterprise.
Oh, I think it's going to be the tech, too. I mean, it seems like it's a very visual reboot.
Because it's clearly not a visually identical tech.
Sure, I mean that's why it's a visual reboot, but it's not a canon reboot.
Said a visual reboot of it. Oh, I was thinking something else. Sorry, that's a good point. Yeah, well, I think, and that's cool with me as long as you get the science right and have it make sense and have a good story.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at as myself. You got to just have a good story, and you know it's got to be just flashy to get the kids through the door. So
absolutely.
Yeah, and don't underestimate the kids for wanting to have intelligent plots that get them riveted, like some little girl reenacted the courtroom scene from Measure of a Man with her stuffed animals when she was young.
I'm
get them addicted to the show. Don't give them like vanilla. Give them complex, beautiful chocolate.
That's exactly what I'm all about. And I, you know, that's the one thing that I think that most Star Trek fans do appreciate, and that a lot of times we feel like we're not being delivered on, is that, you know, the people who are producing the stories sometimes on all science fiction and all, you know, movies out there, they're not giving us any real mental stimulation. So,
yeah. And Star Trek, like, I can see why they also might not want to be, have a moral position on certain things that when they raise the questions, but in the truest Star Trek manner, you don't. You raise both sides and let everyone decide.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so that you couldn't get accused of like, oh, this agenda, that agenda. You're saying no, just see it from both sides.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, right.
I hope we get some more of that. I hope we get some of that at all in Discovery. I would love that. I would love some emotional moments like Measure of a Man that make me like cry. I'm like, oh my God, this is like so touching. And it's hasn't happened yet. I'm hoping it'll be soon.
And I want to learn more about Aaron, the robot officer.
Oh, yeah. What's going on with that?
They have all these peripheral officers that you're like, who's that? What are they about? And you never get to find out.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope we get that, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You guys are awesome. Oh, my gosh. This was – I hunger for this kind of conversation.
That's awesome. Well, this is what we like to do. And like we do these deep dives all the time, me and Dave, all the time about these certain subjects. I'm really excited for, you know, all the points that you brought out, especially when we talked about artificial intelligence and, you know, all sorts of different things like, you know, the double slit experiment. And I mean, just great. This is exactly what our show, what we aim for all the time. And it's awesome that, you know, you're in the same, you know, mindset.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. I wear emo out. He's like, yes, we've been over the consciousness thing, you know, cause he's a great debater too. But like, I just want to do it all day long. And he's like, you know, I probably should take a shower for now.
Well, you know, we'll go ahead and tease it now. I want to have you back for a whole Alien Covenant discussion.
I would love it.
And that'll give us into even more robots and artificial intelligence discussion.
You have to see it though.
I still haven't seen it. I do need to see it. But I do want to schedule a timeout with you if you're willing to come on and do that, because I think that would be so much fun.
I would love to. Oh, would I? Oh, yeah. All ranty up in
oh,
there.
Oh, man. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'd love to. Yeah. Awesome. But there's some really dumb stuff we did there. Get me started now.
Yeah, no, we gotta save it for next time. We'll have a 2-hour rant on Alien Covenant, and it'll be fantastic. So we learned last week that Facebook scares you, and you've done 128 tweets on Twitter.
Yes.
Yes, since 2011. I know. I'm a terrible modern day social media person.
But that's
Kate never learned anything from you, so.
You know, I like it. I want to like it. My brain, it's too abstract for my brain. I have to like touch and feel reality and be interactive with it. It's not real to me for some reason when it's out there. Plus on Twitter, I really don't think that what I had for breakfast is that interesting. You know, tweet it. And also like what I think about every little thing. I'm not sure everyone needs to, you know. I don't think that what I think about everything matters, that I have to tell everyone what I think. You must know what Kipney Brown thinks about this issue. Here, tweet. And I'm not mocking people who have positions, but there are people who take it too far.
Someone recreated my Spore Drive drink.
Serial network.
Someone recreated my Spore Drive drink on Twitter, and they put a picture. And I was like, oh, sweet, someone made my drink.
Did they credit you?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. They did not take it from
me. Yeah, they recreated it, and they're like, oh, look, I got it from, you know, a Synthaholic Duo. So I was like, oh, sweet.
That is very much so. There's lots of stuff that's worth tweeting. I just can't think of anything myself.
Alien Covenant was terrible.
Yeah. Right, that's true.
But you know what, Chipley, actually, from this conversation, it's obviously you do have things that are far more interesting than most people would tweet on Twitter. So
absolutely.
Maybe you're the type of people we need more on Twitter. Not that I'm encouraging you to go on Twitter, because I think you're actually probably right. I think Twitter is just a limited thing just to get a message out and then get off it, because it's a deep, dark rabbit hole that you do not need to go into.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I have an addictive personality, and I know that I could probably just live on Twitter, and I can't go back and forth. The transition is very difficult. Well, I'll start tweeting, hey guys, what about that double slit experiment, right?
Absolutely.
Just start the conversation.
Want to have your mind blown? Double slits.
Double slit all the weight, babies.
Up is it a particle or is it a wave?
It's both. What?
At the same time. Oh my God. It's fantastic.
Slow your mind.
I will retweet it if you do it. Tag me and I'll retweet it.
Okay.
But,
okay.
But that being said, social media, we do, like I said, we send the top of the show. We got the Indiegogo for when the train stops. So definitely check that out.
Or go to whenthetrainstops.com and there'll be a link there.
Mm-hmm.
Or Google
and
Indiegogo.
You can also check out one of my other projects, rurfilm.com.
That's right. That's
the letter R, the letter U, the letter R, and the word film, all one word, .com. And you can see a teaser that I made with James Kerwin, and Vic Mignon is in it as well.
Chase Masterson from DS9.
Chase is in it, and it's a teaser for a film that we hope to make called R U R.
It's phenomenal. Like, this is like the best way you can spend 6 minutes. I mean, it's absolutely amazing. Extremely well done. I need more of this in my life. I hope this gets made in the near future, because I would love to see a full-length version of RUR.
And it's a cool – it actually covers similar topics to what's in Measure of a Man.
Absolutely.
It deals with that. In the teaser, you don't see it quite so much, because we didn't go into the heady stuff too much. You know, it's more a preview of this look and the style for people who might want to invest.
But it talks
about what is humanity, what is it to be alive.
But you get a feel for there's robot intelligence, and then it looks like something bad happens to one of the main characters at the end. Like, are they or are they not? You know,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Great. It makes you think, and I want to see how that all transpires, and it's gonna be fantastic. So definitely check out RUR film. Check out
and you can link
stops.
To it from my site too, which is Kipley.com.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And you're awesome. At Kipley Brown on Twitter?
Yes.
Okay.
But you're not on there. So.
Well,
you can see all 128 of her tweets on the same page. So
yes. Well, I like to keep it short and sweet, and well, I guess that's the whole point of Twitter, but then how about just limited?
Extra short and sweet.
Cuz I'll obsess about it, and I can't just write a tweet. I have to write a perfect tweet. I'm a perfectionist. So, you know, cut to 6 hours later. And that would be my life for one tweet. That's how I am.
Man. You're like the tree consciousness of Twitter.
I obsess, you know? Yeah, I'm like the obsessive tree. Yeah, and that's Facebook too. Like, just writing anything, putting it out into this permanent sphere of information is intense. It has to be perfect and exactly what I mean, blah, blah, blah. And then 6 hours later, I have no life. And back to the animals. Stuffed animals reenacting the courtroom scene. The good old days of the 24th century before there was Twitter.
That's
exactly.
Right. That's right.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on.
Thank you so much.
I'd love to talk about another TNG episode with you sometime.
Yeah. We'd be more than happy to have you on for that.
We haven't done yet. I like Contagion. That's a good one, too.
Well, we haven't talked about that one.
Demons of Air and Darkness.
we just have you do the recap on that one.
Yeah, yeah. You'll
as the female Captain Picard.
There you go. I love it.
Well, all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find at Synthaholic Duo on Twitter, and you can find us at Synthaholics.com. Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan on Twitter,
and I'm Blackbird 2004. And hey, if you get a chance, please go to Apple's iTunes, rate and review us, preferably give us 5 stars, and maybe write a little nice thing about us, about the show, that help us get to seen through the algorithms or the double slit experiment that is known as Apple iTunes. And if you do have an extra buck hanging out in your pocket every month, if you could go on to Patreon / Synthaholics, throw a buck our way just to help us to run our podcast a little smoother. The show's free, but, you know, hey, if you can contribute, it's wonderful. And lastly, also, if you have a friend, let them know about Synthaholics, the podcast. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to people to get to know us. And let them know that Star Trek Continues is awesome. Let them know about the When the Train Stops and Indiegogo. Word of mouth for that is also a wonderful thing, too.
Tell all your friends. Come one, come all. Let them know.
Yes. Wake the kids, phone the neighbors, get it out there.
That's right.
Door to door if you have to.
Yes. At the bus stop.
Be friendly.
Right.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you again, Kimberly, for joining us on the show. And
oh,
2 days in
pleasure.
A row.
Thank you. I know.
It's been so great getting to speak with you.
An embarrassment of riches. Thank you.
Well, thank you again. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all. Good night.
And we'll bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Oh my god! I just looked at the clock. It's nine. It's like almost 9 o'clock. Oh my god!
I know we've been
flew by, man.
We've been geeking out way too much. Well,
we like talked for 30 minutes about Discovery before we even got started.
I hope I didn't eat into your night. Like
no, this is the podcast is pretty much the last thing I do before I go to bed.
Yeah, we geeked out quite a bit. I think I got to go like throw a football around for a little bit. So
yeah,
it's just to prove myself again.
You have a football?
I do have a football, yeah.
Is it Nerf?
Yes. Yes, it is.
It's a Wiffle football.
It's those little tiny ones, not a full one either.
With a tail on it?
Because it hurts my hands.
It's got the tail and it whistles when you throw it so you can find it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.